Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to The Way That Leads to Life. I'm Steve Klein. Great to have you listening to our program this morning. Hope that everything is getting off to a good start for you today, that you're looking forward to getting out and worshiping God this morning, this first day of the week, when Christians all over the world come together to remember Jesus Christ and to honor the God of heaven. We'd love for you to come and do that with us this morning at the Eastside Church of Christ. We meet at 110 French Way in Athens, Alabama. If you're anywhere in the Athens area, come be with us at 9 o'clock. We'll have a Bible study and a worship assembly, and we'd just love to get to meet you and know you and share our faith with you. If you're not able to get out in person, you can check us out online. Our services are live streamed. You can go to our Facebook page, Eastside Church of Christ in Athens, or look at our website, eastside-church.com. eastside-church.com, and go to the resources tab and click on the stream our services. But again, come out and be with us today if you possibly can. Well, tax time is just about upon us. April 15th will be here before you know it. Taxes are supposed to be filed and paid and all of that. And if you're expecting a refund, you may have already taken care of that. If you're thinking you might have to pay, you're probably, like a lot of folks, waiting until the last minute to file those taxes. My wife prepared taxes for many, many years for people, and I know that it's a time of stress for a lot of folks, especially who owe money. And a lot of people, of course, most all of us, don't particularly like to pay taxes, but we know that it's our duty and, in a way, our privilege as citizens. A question about paying taxes was asked of Jesus one time in Matthew chapter 22, and we're going to be looking at that this morning because in his answer, I think we can kind of understand some very important truths about not only our obligation to government, but our obligations and duties toward God. And these truths will be very important to us as we're trying to walk the way that leads to life. The question of what part of us belongs to God and what part of us belongs to government needs to be answered really clearly in the mind of every person who's striving to please God, especially in a time, you know, when political parties are pressing us for our allegiance in this country. Jesus gives some clarity on the matter. He helps us understand where our real allegiance needs to be, and yet how we can express the honor that is due to government at the same time. So in Matthew 22, we'll pick up the reading in verse 15. It says that the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle Jesus in his talk. And they sent to him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God in truth, nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money." So they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, "Whose image and inscription is this?" They said to him, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And when they heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. So the Pharisees send some of their disciples, along with some people called the Herodians, to Jesus to ask this question about paying taxes to Caesar. The Herodians and Pharisees were at the opposite ends of the political spectrum in that day. The Herodians were people who supported the Roman government. The Herods were regional kings over Judea and some of the surrounding area that were appointed by the Romans. And so the Herodians supported the Herods as their legitimate rulers. But most of the Pharisees were purists who believed that, you know, foreign powers should have no control over Israel or the affairs of God's people. So you have these groups, as I said, from different sides of the political spectrum, are sent to Jesus to ask him this question, to try to entrap him, to try to get him to say something that would legitimize their hatred for him and lead up to his crucifixion. You know, often in politics, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so if we have a common enemy, we unite in order to fight that common enemy. To the Herodians and the Pharisees, Jesus was their common enemy. They were afraid he was going to take their power. He'd already taken a lot of their popularity from a lot of the people. And so they were against him. The Pharisees plotted how they might entangle Jesus in talk with this question that they think he cannot answer without, you know, getting himself in trouble. Because if he says, yeah, we should pay taxes to Caesar, then a lot of people are going to say, well, he's for the Roman government. He's not a true patriot. He's not a true Israelite. If he says, no, we should not pay taxes to Caesar, then there's going to be a segment of the Jews who are going to say, oh, he's rebelling against the Roman government, and then he would be in trouble with the Romans. So the Pharisees think they've got him trapped in an unanswerable question here. In fact, of course, that's not the case. But to really understand what's going on, maybe a little background to the situation with the Roman imperial tax and the coin that the Jews used to pay that tax in the time of Christ would be in order. So the Romans levied this imperial tax only on conquered people, not on their own citizens. So every Israelite had to pay this tax. It amounted to at least one day's wage. A denarius is a coin that was paid to somebody for one day's work back in the first century in Israel. So that tax was to be given to the Roman government. These people who viewed themselves as belonging to God, these Israelites, then had to pay this annual reminder of the fact that the Romans claimed ownership over them in this day and time, something that you can imagine most of them didn't go along with and didn't appreciate. What made matters worse was that the coin itself, this denarius, on one side of it, it bore an image of Caesar. Many Romans worshipped Caesar as a deity. In fact, later on, they're going to try to compel Christians to worship Caesar as a deity. On the other side of the coin, there was usually some kind of reference to the high priest of Roman paganism. So for Jews, this coin itself violated the first two of the Ten Commandments. You're to have no other gods before me, and you're to make no graven images. This is the coin that the Jews had to get hold of to pay the Roman tax with. So Jews are forced to pay this coin for this tax. You can imagine none of that set well with most of the Jews. And if you think our taxes are bad today, and our taxes are considerably high in this country, but consider those of ancient Israel. King Herod and his family, so again, Herods were these regional kings that the Romans had set up over this area. King Herod and his family collected taxes in the name of Rome to support its military, building projects, lavish lifestyles, all of that. The family also paid tribute to Rome, and so it added even heavier taxes to compensate, to make up for all of this that they were spending. On top of that, the prefect of Judea and Samaria collected the land and imperial taxes directly for Rome. Then the Jewish religious authorities also exacted their own taxes for the temple in Jerusalem and its services required money to operate, and so the Jewish leaders taxed their own people for that. We have a reference to this earlier in the Gospel of Matthew, in Matthew chapter 17. Jesus and his disciples had come into Capernaum, and those who received the temple tax came to Peter and said, "Does your teacher not pay the temple tax?" So these were some of the Jewish tax collectors going around, and they wondered if Jesus was going to pay the temple tax or not. So Peter said, well, yes. But then he went into the house and Jesus anticipated him and said, "What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take customs or taxes? From their sons or from strangers?" And Peter said to him, "From strangers." And Jesus said to him, "Well, then the sons are free." So Jesus is reasoning with Peter. And what he's doing is he's helping Peter understand that really Jesus shouldn't have to pay the temple tax because, you know, the temple is his father's house and he's the son of God. And so why would you pay taxes to your father on your own house? That's kind of the reasoning that Jesus is taking Peter through. But then Jesus goes on to say in verse 27, "Nevertheless, lest we offend them, go to the sea, cast in a hook, take the fish that comes up first, and when you've opened its mouth, you will find a piece of money. Take that and give it to them for me and for you." So Jesus is having Peter pay the temple tax for them so that they won't offend people. There's no sense in offending people over something like this when, you know, there are bigger concerns in the ministry of Jesus than getting people mad at him because he's not paying taxes. So he has Peter pay the taxes for them. But my point here is that the Jews were paying an extraordinary amount of taxes. In fact, you put all of that together, and some scholars estimate that a Jewish family may have paid out nearly half of its annual income in taxes and or bribes. Half of your income. We pay a lot of taxes in the United States, but not nearly that much. The average American household pays roughly 30% of its income in combined federal, state, local taxes, according to some data from 2024 at least. So the Jews were paying way more taxes comparatively than we are today. They didn't like it. It was a big issue with them, even as it's an issue for us today, but even bigger with them, again, because of the political situation, because they were being occupied by a foreign power. They were paying taxes to a foreign government. We would not like that. If some other country conquered the United States and we had to pay taxes to that country, we would not like that at all. The United States was kind of founded on the principle that, you know, we were paying taxes to England and we didn't have any representation in England. So that was a problem then. It would be a problem for most people now. That was the problem the Jews were having. And so they bring this question to Jesus. And he answers in such an amazing way that they are astounded by how wise and direct also that his answer was. He said again, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." So Caesar gets taxes. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's. The idea behind the word that Jesus uses there is translated render. Render to Caesar, or give to Caesar, means to repay. The idea is, the concept is, that when you pay taxes, you're giving the government money for things that they are doing. You're repaying them for things that they're doing for you. In Jesus' time, the government, the Roman government, was very corrupt, but it provided good roads. It provided, in some cases, water, police force, oftentimes relief for the poor. All of that was provided by the Roman government. And so there were things that the people, the citizenry, and those who had been conquered by Rome needed to pay for. And that's only right and just, that we pay our share for the public good, for what the government is doing for us. Of course, the government also provides protection for the nation, and protection for good people from evil people. We're going to turn over in our Bibles now to the book of Romans, chapter 13, and notice what the Apostle Paul here has to say about paying taxes because of what the government is doing for us in protecting us from evil people. In Romans chapter 13, starting in verse 1, the Apostle Paul writes, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. The authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. He is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs are due, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." This text tells us really plainly that God ordains government, and that Christians, those who are walking the way that leads to life, need to respect government. They need to honor those who are in government authority. They need to pay their taxes. So we do that because God says to do it, because he's the one who's ordained government, and because, after all, government does protect good people from evil people, generally at least. The bad people, government puts in jails. punishes, and that serves to protect God's people from them and from their wicked works. So government gets taxes because it provides these services, also because it's ordained of God. God tells us to pay those taxes. God, however, gets what's owed to him. You know, Jesus said, "Render to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." God gets free will gifts from those who have first given themselves to him. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, in verse 3, there the Apostle Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, and trying to encourage them to do some giving for some poor Christians that are in Jerusalem. There are some other churches that are taking up collections to send to the poor Christians that are in Jerusalem. Among them, some churches in Macedonia. And Paul is talking about those churches that had already given for this great need. He says, again, 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 3, "I bear them witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of ministering to the saints. Not only as we had hoped, but first they gave themselves to the Lord, and then to us by the will of God." So what is it that these Christians in these churches in Macedonia had given to God? Well, first they gave themselves. That's what you owe God. That's what you need to render to God. You pay taxes to the government, but to God, you give yourself. And then, if God can use your money, you give that as well. In this case, there were poor Christians who needed help, and these Macedonian Christians, although they weren't rich themselves, they were more than happy to give what they had to help the poor Christians in another place. And it's very, very commendable. That's what Paul is doing. He's saying, here's the way that Christians need to be. The thing is, you give yourself to God, and then anything else of yours that God needs in his cause or for his purposes is at his disposal. You're going to give that to him as well. You give to God what is God's. Giving to God from our finances, then, if you're a Christian, is not a tax. It's not something that you have to give a certain amount. You're not in a certain bracket, you know, like when you pay your taxes. If you make so much, you're in a certain bracket, you have to pay this much. That's not how it is with God. Giving for his cause is a joyful expression of our gratitude and love. We belong to him. We've given ourselves to him. So as Paul writes about this to the Corinthians in the next chapter, 2 Corinthians chapter 9, still talking about giving to help others, these churches giving to help the poor Christians in Jerusalem, he says, "So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver." You don't give it, you know, some people, when they pay their taxes, that's they're doing that very grudgingly. They don't want to have to do that. And yet they need to. So we pay taxes because it's of necessity. We have to. But what God is saying is, you give yourself to me because you want to. And the things that you have that I have given to you, you also let me have those because you want to. Because you love me and you love my cause. I read an account of an older preacher that was visiting some denominational church somewhere, and he was preaching about tithing. Of course, tithing is this concept that comes out of the Old Testament where the Israelites were supposed to give a tenth of everything that they possessed, not everything they made, but everything they possessed. And so it was quite a bit that they were to give according to the Old Testament law. And so this preacher was preaching about this, and he put 10 apples up on the pulpit as an illustration. And he walked behind and he said to the congregation, "Now we've been talking about the tithe. How many of these apples belong to God? How would you answer?" And most people said, "Well, one apple out of the 10 belongs to God. That's a tithe." He said, "No, that's the wrong answer. They all belong to God. We give one back to remind ourselves from where they come." Now, I think the illustration he was trying to point out that everything belongs to God, and it does. God, though, has entrusted us with things that belong to him. We give back to him not because we're giving a certain percentage of what he's given to us. We give back to him not from a tithe, not out of necessity, not because we're in a certain bracket. We give cheerfully because first we've given ourselves to God. It is true that as the Old Testament says in Psalm 24 and verse 1, the earth is the Lord and all its fullness, the world and those who dwell in it. God, you know, he has everything. But we have the opportunity to give ourselves to him and then to give anything else that he wants to use also in his service. So when Jesus says, give to Caesar the things that belong to Caesar and to God the things that belong to God, he's really saying a lot there, and we need to understand what it is that he's saying if we're going to walk the way that leads to life. We not only give God ourselves and our resources, we also give him our honor and affection. Caesar gets honor. You know, the head of a government deserves honor. We saw that in Romans chapter 13 and verse 7, that we're to give honor to government officials who are due honor. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 17, the Apostle Peter says, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. And it doesn't matter, you know, if the president is Trump or Biden or Obama or Bush, if they're the president of the United States, they are owed a degree of honor from people who are doing what God says. And we need to understand that as God's people. But God gets more than honor. He certainly gets honor, but he gets adoration and he gets worship. In Matthew chapter 4 and verse 10, Jesus was tempted by the devil. The devil was trying to get Jesus to worship him. And Jesus responds in Matthew 4 and verse 10, and he says, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. We may honor a president or a government official, but we not only honor, but worship the God of heaven. And the two must not be confused. In the book of Revelation, there are some fascinating lessons that sometimes we overlook. Revelation is not the easiest book to read through and understand, but it's clear that there's a government in the book of Revelation, the Roman government, that is trying to get control of Christians and get the allegiance of Christians and have Christians give up their allegiance to God and worship the Caesar. In Revelation chapter 13 and verse 8, as John is seeing this great beast that is making war with the saints and trying to overcome them, John says that all who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the Lamb's book of life, slain from the foundation of the world. So there are people who are worshiping this beast who represents Roman government and the head of Roman government. Do political affiliations and allegiances today rival this? In the first century and a little later on, Christians were compelled to worship Caesar or face death. Now, today in our society, that's typically not what we have to worry about. And yet, there are those who act as if government leaders are going to save us from all of our problems. They're like our saviors. They're going to provide for all of our needs. They should be trusted. They should be praised. They should be relied upon for our very existence. Political leaders are not gods. They're not to become gods. We're to give God the things that belong to God. Our worship, our adoration, our full trust, that goes to God. That doesn't go to Caesar. It will not end well for those who put world leaders on the pedestal where only God belongs. God is the creator and the sustainer, and he alone is worthy of worship. In the next chapter of the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 14, in verses 6 and 7, there we have some angels appearing on the scene. John says, I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made heaven and earth and sea and springs of water. He's telling people to worship God. Don't worship a government or the head of a government. Later on in this same chapter, in verse 9 of Revelation 14, the text says that a third angel followed him, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives the mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, who worship the beast and his image, and whoever receives the mark of his name. Yeah, we don't need to worship the beast. We don't need to worship man-made political powers as if they are God. We need to render to God the things that are God. In Acts chapter 12, there's an interesting story of King Herod going to Caesarea and giving a speech to some of his political admirers. The text tells us in verse 21 of Acts 12 that on a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat on his throne and gave an oration to them, and the people kept shouting, "The voice of a god and not of a man." And immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give glory to God, and he was eaten by worms and died. That's a horrible thing to think about, but here's a person who is just a man, a king ordained by God, so he deserved honor, but he did not deserve worship. You know, when Peter and Paul lived, the king who was sitting on the throne in Rome, the Caesar, the emperor of Rome, was a man by the name of Nero, who was a terrible person. He was as ungodly a person as you could be. He was responsible for martyring Christians and just doing a number of horrible things. And yet he is still to be honored in that day, both Peter and Paul. We read the passages in Romans 13 and in 1 Peter, where both of those apostles tell Christians to honor the king. You still needed to honor the king. But no matter whether the king is a great and noble person or just somebody who's in that position, whatever it might be, you honor him, but you don't worship him as God. He's not God. We need to give our honor and affection to Christ and to God the Father. And we need to give them our submission. That is to say, they are the ones who are in charge of our lives, God the Father and God the Son. Now, Caesar gets submission too. In fact, in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13, Peter writes, "Therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors, as to those who are sent by him for punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good." So we're to be subject, that is, we are to obey government authorities, the laws of the land. But our total submission goes to God. We obey the laws of the land because God set up the government of the land, and that's for our good, as we've already seen in Romans 13. But that human government only gets submission because it's ordained by God's power, as we saw in Romans 13. Jesus said to Pilate in John chapter 19, in verse 11, that Pilate, although he was the governor of Judea appointed by Rome, he says, "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above." Pilate had power, but he only had it because God had given it to him. And any time the laws of man are in conflict with the laws of God, we must obey the law of God. Peter will also say in Acts chapter 5 and verse 29 that we must obey God rather than man. So God's law supersedes man's law, human law. So we give our obedience to human government. Caesar gets submission, but not more submission than God does. Ultimately, we owe our allegiance and our obedience to the God of heaven. So let us understand this morning that if we're going to walk the way that leads to life, we must render to Caesar the things that belong to Caesar, but we must render to God the things that belong to God. And that includes ourselves, giving of ourselves, our submission to him, our worship to him, and our love for him.